boycott the movie, if you do watch it, think, watch it critically and understand how erasing the key trans women of color that were key actors in the movement hurts trans women of color in the present. And then I ended with a very, very, very quick discussion about Christian Taylor, rest in power. And once again, the police officer involved in this shooting has been fired from Arlington police force, and criminal charges might be pressed upon him. So you've been listening.
The Radio McGill Montreal, nicest every time, bitter road of music, it's a ball. Bojabantan says so. World of people call, all the Radio McGill in Montreal can read on CKUT. Reggae music for you and me, no color barrier.
If your last vaccination against COVID-19 was more than 5 months ago, it's time to get another dose. Boosting your antibodies reduces the risk of getting or transmitting the virus, and booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Hey, all you hip-hop heads. NDG's favorite urban music festival is back. Prévention Côte des Neiges NDG and Elementality are proud to present the 18th edition of Hip Hop You Don't Stop, ending the summer on a high note with a weekend full of performances, art showcases, dance battles, and community gathering. Featured artists include Mackie Lavender, Miriam Sassy, Remy Picasso, Shades Lawrence, DJ Pro V, and more. It's all going down Friday, September 16th to Sunday, September 18th, and it's all free. Visit linktree.com/HHYDS Montreal for more information and stay connected, because hip-hop doesn't stop here. Hip-Hop You Don't Stop is brought to you with the support of Canadian Heritage and La Ville de Montréal, a CKUT co-presentation.
CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture, and tell the masses them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. Well, CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture, and tell the massive them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. Well, 90.3 FM. It's CKUT, the cultural radio station. Radio McGill. Blessed love. The messenger. Take it away.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Quality sounds, tune into CKUT 90.3 on the frequency modulation band radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
CKUT.
Check one, check two. CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Good afternoon. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This is If You've Got Ears. Thank you to Z-Rock for that Scratch Party number one mix. Today we pay tribute to British composer Philip Jeck, who passed away this week. Philip Jeck was a multimedia artist and composer. He worked mainly with old, decrepit turntables and beat-up old records and some looping devices, all of which he used to weave together long kind of narratives of sound. We'll start things off with a few selections from Jeck's 1999 release, Surf. And we'll get into an interview I conducted with Philip Jeck in 2003 on the steps of the Juste Pour Rire cabaret venue on Saint-Laurent Boulevard with Mr. Jeck almost 20 years ago. But first, here's two selections from Philip Jeck's album, Surf. We're going to hear Spirits Up and Tilting here on If You've Got Ears, CQT. Rest in peace, Philip Jeck. Surf on Touch Records. We are here on If You've Got Ears paying tribute to hauntologist Philip Jeck, who passed away this week. As I mentioned earlier, I conducted an interview with Mr. Jeck at the Mutech Festival in May 2003 on the steps of the Cabaret Just Pour Rire. Seems like a long time ago. So we'll hear this conversation in two parts. This is If You've Got Ears, Philip Jeck. Let's listen.
How do you feel about going, when you are going straight from a board, sending all those analog signals into something, converting it to digital?
Yeah, well, it's you know, that's a medium now. So like I mean, I'm not like a dyed-in-the-wool analog buff.
Right.
You know, whatever is the easiest and best way of recording it. You know, I mean, that's what I use. I use analog stuff. Although, as I say, I'm using loops, but they're just loops straight from some records and stuff on the mini disc in a way to like, in a way, make like another, in a way, like another turntable sound. And I use like a little dictaphone as well, which
right.
got stuff on it too, which is. Obviously, very very lo-fi. So yeah, whatever you know. Of course, if it was absolutely possible, if it was possible, I would like there to be somebody to have like a really top quality reel-to-reel recording.
Yeah.
But you know, they're just that's not possible anymore because they're so damn expensive
and big.
And people don't have them anymore. They have mini discs and DATs now. What's given is what I use.
In some of the articles that I've read about you in various places, you mentioned that when you first got using turntables, you were inspired by sort of early DJ culture.
Yeah.
Do you still see yourself sort of fitting into that?
It's sort of where it's come from, but I mean, the influence was not so much, although I really liked it, it's not so much the people like early people like Grandmaster Flash and that wasn't so much an influence. There's more people like Larry Levan and Walter Gibbons, Shep Pettibone, who were like DJs that were mixing in a way in long form rather than short cut up form like hip hop
right.
stuff is.
Right.
You know, doing long breaks of you know, just the instrumental breaks, making them really long and
right.
Stuff. That was, I suppose, more my more of an influence to
right.
me than the other. You know, because it's. Like and now like it's moved on so many years. Like people that are using turntables, it's there's so many variations of it. In the same way as like you know guitar, and it's just in a way it's you know it is an instrument now that people use, but it's the people that use it and the way they use it. In the same way as a guitar, you know, guitar in the hands of Jimmy Page is very different to the in the hands of say Julian Bream or somebody, you know,
yeah.
or Pat Metheny or something like that. You know, it's
yeah.
it's the same instrument, but
and it's become a virtuoso. A lot of it,
yeah,
too.
The you know the range of stuff you do the instrument. It's what you bring to it and how you use it. You know, which is how it should be. You know, it shouldn't. You know. In a way, you don't want thousands of people doing the same thing.
Yeah. And you mean the some of the names you mentioned, I can really hear that on something like Vinyl Coda 1-3, the two disc thing. It really feels like kind of a long
yeah.
progressive thing. I don't know. I just get a sense there's almost like a narrative to it. You know, sometimes.
Yeah,
I think I like
there to be like a I think. Like something that travels,
yeah.
it goes from some place and then it moves through different things and ends up somewhere else. You know, that's you know, it's like a landscape. Of, you know, that my background and my training was in visual art, so you
yeah.
know that's. And I still think that is in what I do, but in sound terms rather than in visual terms. You know. And you know, and as far as where I place myself, I think, you know, it's it. I just feel that I'm just part of musical history, you know. It's like whatever that's gone before me, not just turntable people, but all, in a way, all the history of music, because I use, you know, recordings of every type, every style, every degree of music that I use in what I do. So it's just like it's a moment. It's this moment now from all the things that come before, and also maybe implying things that might follow afterwards. Other people do other things, you know, come out of what I do, or other turntable people do, you know, and things shift and change, and a particular to their time, but also hopefully they're still able to stand up and be listenable some way in the future, and people, you know, is it the same way as I can listen to music that was composed in the 15th century or whatever, and it still sounds fantastic. Hopefully, you know, what I do somewhere in years in the future, maybe somebody will come across some of my stuff and say, oh, that, you know, can still relate to it. Yeah,
right.
In a way, the approach that I use to do what I do is actually my emotional response to the sounds that I'm using, and,
right,
and like how, and like two different things, putting them together, how they fit, and how they, and then maybe how I can progress and move them on. It's music from the heart,
right,
rather than not so much from the head. Also, there's head things in it, because, you know, with the, right, with the things you're using, you have to know how they work and stuff. But that's one of the reasons I use very low tech stuff, very simple stuff. Is, in a way, I don't have to have a great knowledge of the technicals of it. There is some technical expertise, I suppose, in some sense, in what I'm doing. But I know what this is and I know what it is. But that's not what I'm thinking about. You know, I'm not. Hankering for the next piece of equipment that might, if I can get this, it'll make it better. You know, in a way, I've gone lower and lower tech as I've progressed. So I did start out, you know, using, you know, Technics decks and stuff, but now I use just really old, semi-broken down 50s, 60s record players.
I found on Stoke that, I mean, maybe it was just in comparison to Vinyl Coda, the pieces were shorter, but almost, I felt like they were sort of almost more arranged in some ways. There's like a piece, I think it's called Pax, on the disc.
Yeah.
That has the sort of a very distinguishable lead kind of vocal line. Almost reminded me of an old soul.
Well,
some,
it's actually,
Franklin,
it's,
or something.
It's called Pax because it's actually a country record. Country singer doing Peace in the Valley. That's what Pax is, Latin for peace.
Right.
And so it's two or three copies of that record, and actually a little tiny bit of a very early disco record in with it. It's like little touches of drums and stuff. The stuff is from that. But it's in a way that's quite a. That's as it's a little bit editing on that, but it's pretty much as it's recorded. Most of the album, one track on it is which I really did put together on my sort of four-track hard disk for a film, a friend of mine. But all the others, everything else on there is pretty well recorded live, various concerts and stuff. But they're all edited. They're like, you know, one track might consist of like four or five different concerts, but edited together. So I think I'm composing and structured. I composed and structured those pieces from, you know, used as my raw material, my own concert recordings, and then like edited them together and put different things together in a way to make pieces out of them. So it is more arranged. It's less free than the Vinyl Coda things, because they are straight live recordings as they were, and they're all for all those ones are for German radio, and they were all actually perform completely live, although, you know, the first one I got to live in a studio, but actually live to air.
Right.
They weren't like pre-recorded and then played. It was actually done live to air.
Thank you.
This is If You've Got Ears. That was Philip Jeck with the piece Pax from the 2002 release Stoke on Touch Records. Let's get into part two of my interview with Philip Jeck from MuTek 2003, the MuTek Festival where Mr. Jeck performed. And after the interview, we'll hear two compositions from a recording of a live performance from Switzerland, I believe, on Swiss radio. We'll hear Vinyl Codas Part 1 and 3. That's the first disc from the Vinyl Coda 2 CD released in, I think, the year 2000. Thanks for listening. This is If You've Got Ears. Rest in peace, Philip Jeck.
Do you have certain things that you look for when you go hunting for records? You know, like
not really. I've got loads. I've got boxes full of old records and stuff that people have given me, or I've bought from junk shops and stuff. It's a mixture, to be honest, in a way, chosen stuff, but also stuff. I also still use stuff at random, you know. I will always bring, wherever I'm going to do a concert, I will, you know, I'll take the stuff that I know, but also I'll put in, you know, half a dozen things that that maybe I haven't really ever played before. I only played once or twice, so I'm not quite sure what they are, but but at some point I'll just put them on, particularly maybe put them on when it's like a wake-up call to me, that you know, when I feel like, it's going a bit stale. You know, I'm just doing what I know. Let's just bung something on and see what happens. You know, because it really puts you on your mettle. You know, you're like, shit, I have to really do something with this now. I'm like, I feel my mind really wakes up when I do those things. Yeah.
Wow. Do you have any favorite spots that you do you go look for records at, or?
No.
Just kind of stumble on them?
Yeah, they just come across them. And, you know, occasionally I'll be going to a charity shop or a junk shop, and it's sort of, I tell you what, the major reason I ever buy stuff is when it's really dirt cheap.
Right.
If there's a whole bunch of records that are obviously in a really poor state, so there's no way that it can sell them for any real money.
Right.
You're
doing someone a favour,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, I'm taking them off. Well, because people that have got old scratch records at home, whatever, you know, that friends of mine, you know, they know what I did, so that they give them to me, you know, maybe we're going to shop and I might buy 20 for a pound or something,
right.
You know, and then maybe listen through some of them and choose stuff. And then, as I said, the other thing is that maybe I'll use some of them for like random chance elements in what I do.
Well, I mean, that must be fairly convenient to not, you know, hip hop DJs go out and look exclusively for four-bar breaks. It's become this sort of scarce natural resource.
Yeah, so when I sort of started out, I mean, I went out and, you know, bought a second turntable and a little mixer and stuff, and I was living in London then, and I was, you know, playing for parties and warehouse dues and stuff, and started to get a little bit into that culture, and like, yeah, then you're going out to the specialist shops and buying the new, you know, white label and stuff like that, which all cost a fortune, and I just like, oh God, it's
draining.
Yeah, it's draining. You spend all your time researching it rather than doing it, but that was a very short period. I actually quite quickly started to move on, really through actually meeting other people in London, that, you know, people that were involved there with the LMC and stuff, London Musicians Collective,
right.
That is, and like doing things with those folks and stuff, and just, you know, just really shifted, you know, and I sort of got, you know, playing stuff for parties and clubs and that. It's, you know, you are really completely beholden to playing stuff with beats, and which is fine, you know, if people want for dancing, of course that's absolutely right, but you know, that wasn't really what I wanted to do, and also I don't think I was particularly that good at it, you know.
It's not easy.
Yeah, I didn't have the ambition to really go at that, so you know, in a way it sort of, you know, just organically evolved what I did through that, and actually a big part of how I developed in what I did was actually I met up with this is in the early 80s in London, I met up with a dancer, Laurie Booth, choreographer, and I worked with him a lot through the 80s. And he had a really good agent in Europe, and we did loads and loads of like gigs around Europe. And I sort of developed what I did sort of pretty well live on stage as much as playing around at home. You know, finding out for me what worked and, you know, what directions and stuff that I wanted to go in. And so that was great. I was getting paid to develop my work, you know.
Do you haul your old turntables around with you?
Yeah, that's one thing that's is a big drag. It's, I mean, I, you know, carrying the gear around is no fun, you know. It's,
mm-hmm.
I know, you know, especially these days with, you know, security so tight, airports and stuff, I invariably get everything searched,
right.
Every time, because you can imagine what,
yeah.
You know, as soon as they X-ray one of my cases, you know, all those wires and stuff like that, it just looks scary on an X-ray. So
yeah.
I have to like show everything, and then they are, you know, well, what are you doing with this? And so like,
you
can imagine explaining to some customs guy at an airport what this stuff is for. You know, like,
oh, no.
Actually, sometimes they don't really believe you for some strange reason.
Yeah, it must be much easier for a lot of these musicians now, who just basically it's a laptop.
Yeah, that's one thing I like about laptops is that you can carry it in one small case, and everybody knows what it is, and it's it's not heavy, and you know, you don't have to explain, you know, because you can be a businessman, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes when I listen to your records, I feel like a sound will come up, and I'll be like, it'll sound familiar, and I'll think, has he used that before? Or do you have sort of favorite little clips textures?
Yeah, they sort of shift, but yeah, I reuse stuff a lot. Yeah, feel like, you know, there's still mileage to be got out of this particular record or this particular sound. Yeah, there are. I do have some particular favourites that I use nearly always. Yeah, until that record completely wears out, and then it goes, and then maybe I'll find another one. So it just gradually shifts over time. Probably compared to 5 or 6 years ago, there's probably only one or two left that I'm still using. But but yeah, I go through a whole periods of using the same records a lot, and then, as I say, they wear out, and then it evolves into the next bunch. Yeah.
Is there certain things like, I don't know, maybe say a class, you know, you just know right away that a classical record that's pressed onto a 78 plate at 16 is going to give you a certain texture?
Yeah, I don't use too many 78s because they break too easily. You're right. Transporting them, shellacs, they break.
Right.
But generally, you know that you're going to be able to use a choral piece fairly easily, just because of the nature of the sound. Not big orchestral pieces, because they too easily become like messy, too much. But like a string quartet or like a duo or whatever, where the sounds are in a way more minimal. I recently came in a charity shop at home in Liverpool. I came across a bunch of like Schumann and Bach recordings and stuff, like violin and piano, or two violins or violin and cello and stuff, or little solo cello pieces and stuff, and I got five or six of those, and I just knew that they would be great, and they are. They're just fantastic, you know, absolutely superb sound, you know.
Wow.
And like playing those 45s at 16, just they immediately sound brilliant, you know.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is back from September 28th to October 2nd, 2022. 5 days of music and over 200 artists, including teen punk viral sensations The Linda Lindas, Canada's first drag race winner Priyanka, 70s British funk group Simone, Grammy-nominated and Juno Award winner Alison Russell, iconic dancehall queen Sister Nancy, post-rock legends Tortoise, and many more. The festival also features film screenings, visual art, symposium discussions, and as always, many surprises. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.